say my name until the city burns and the stars fade away and your scars don't hurt. I will hold you till the sun comes crashing down. I'm yours until the end of time.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Restored to More podcast, a listener-supported podcast that is dedicated to restoring marriages to wholeness in Christ after being affected by pornography and sexual brokenness.
After betraying Charity with pornography and unwanted sexual behavior, we had no idea how to rebuild our relationship or even if it was possible to restore what was broken.
Today, by God's grace, we have learned how to connect again, laugh again, and rebuild spiritual, emotional, and sexual intimacy to an even greater experience than before.
Our goal is that as you hear our story, the stories of others, and the knowledge needed to heal, you too can have a marriage that is becoming restored to more.
I'm yours until the end of time.
Update everyone. Course 1 registrations are back open. Whoop whoop. This is an 8-week course starting Thursday, September 14th that is designed to help you and your spouse start the journey to becoming restored to more. It will be led by R2M certified coaches, Cody and Michelle Larson. We will be focusing on how to cultivate safety and trust, healthy communication, deal with triggers, and begin to discover how God can use crisis to create closeness. You can see all the details on our website and can register today at www.restoredtomore.com/courses. Also, if you have appreciated this podcast, a great way to say thank you is leaving a 5-star rating and a positive review. These reviews help more people find the podcast and experience hope and healing.
Say my name until the city.
Welcome back. I'm Clinton. I am so sad that Charity is not with me. I am currently at the SILS conference. This is the Sexual Integrity Leadership Summit, our second year coming. Get so surrounded by amazing leaders. And one of those leaders is Josh Glazer. So I get to sit with Josh right now. We're having a chat in one of the breakout rooms. And I'm excited to have Josh here. Let me tell you a little bit about him. So Josh has served as the executive director since 2006. And has been with Regeneration Ministries since 1999. His heart is to help people experience ever-deepening union with Jesus in the areas they need him most. Josh is the author of Awaken, a year-round discipleship program for men seeking a deeper intimacy with Jesus as their source of freedom from sexual sin. He has been married to his beautiful wife, Jamie, since 2001, is a pastor, speaker, writer, and a blogger. Josh, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah. Hey, I got to go to one of your sessions earlier, and it threw this whole podcast for like a twist, because I had all these ideas where we're going to go, and after hearing part of your story and just you talking, I just felt like, man, I just want to hang out with you, man, like get to know you more. And so, and your story just connects with me so much. So why don't we just start with your own personal story?
Yeah.
You can go as far back as you want, or you can kind of start in the middle or wherever.
Yeah. I mean, because it does all connect, doesn't it? I'll start with what got me into this area of ministry.
Yeah. Perfect.
I was sharing with you guys earlier this, and there was this, cause this is kind of a key moment for me. I remember I was in college and this is before everybody had their own device in their pocket and stuff. So I was viewing pornography at the student center on the computer there, and I'd recently discovered the internet, which was, it had been around, but I was like, oh, look at this. And I felt this combination, but like when I first looked at porn online, I looked at pornography in other places, but when I first saw porn online, I had this two feelings at the same time. On the one side, I felt like jackpot, like, oh my gosh, there's so much here.
Yeah.
On the other side, I felt this sense of terror. Like I just opened Pandora's box and I'm not going to be able to shut this. And I was already out of control. So I was kind of like, where's this going to go? And it continued. So, and I had accountability at this point in my life. So I was not in the dark about it, but we didn't know how to help each other.
Yeah.
And so after graduation, really sensed the Lord telling me to put some of my own plans on hold for a bit. Didn't know why, but I kind of just stayed put where I was. And then not long after that, learned about Regeneration, the ministry that I now lead. Started going to groups there and really was led on a journey to know Christ more deeply. That's not why I went. I had an intimate relationship with Jesus, but I think it was almost like there were these doors inside of me that were shut. I didn't know they were shut. They were shut to me. They were shut to him. And through the help of some just mentors there and some stuff I started to read, it was like people started like walking down hallways with me and knocking on, hey, what's behind this? I was like, oh, I thought there was a wall. It's a door. I don't know what's behind that door. You know, it was that kind of stuff. So. And so transformation started, and I think that was both transformation in my own sexual integrity, but also really transformation and beginning to know God as the gracious, good God he is.
You talked about loving Jesus, hating pornography, and living in this tension between, God, why wouldn't you take this away? And I think, you know, when you say that, I really connect to that personally, because I loved Jesus from a young age. Mm-hmm. I was personally like leading a prayer at the flagpole at like my junior high and high school, mm-hmm. and leading worship, and just this heart for God. I wanted to be on the mission field. Every chance a mission popped up, I was signing up for inner city LA, inner city San Fran, all these Mexico every spring break. I mean, I just lived for that. I even said no to friend groups because they weren't following the Lord. And so I truly loved being with Jesus. But for me, there was this secret sin and not even a secret. I could tell pastors, but I got no help when I did. Yeah. And I just was so frustrated. And I think I didn't go there until much later, actually in recovery, with really discovering, like, God, why didn't you take this away? So can you share a part of that story that would relate to that?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember, this is the walking across my college campus and kind of shaking a fist at God, the night sky. Just, I love you. I know you love me. I hate this stuff. I hate what I'm doing. I know you hate it. I've prayed. I know you can take it away, but you're not taking it away. Why not? And I think, you know, some of the knocking on doors thing that I hadn't known there, so I'm going to mix metaphors here, was there were roots to what I was struggling with that went down to some important, valuable places inside of me. And the parable that's meant so much to me is he talks about this landowner who's sowed good wheat seed in his field, and an enemy who comes and sows weeds in with it. And how when they both start coming up together, the servants start recognizing, hold on, this isn't all wheat. Some of these are weeds. And they go to the landowner and they're like, hey, your enemy's done some bad stuff here. You want us to pull the weeds out? And his response to them is no, which is frustrating, I think, for most of us. It was frustrating for me. I was like, Lord, you hate this stuff. I hate this stuff. Like, let's get rid of it.
Yeah.
But the landowner is, in the parable, like God, is interested in the wheat. His eyes are on the wheat. And so I think, likewise, there were things in me that God cherished. And he did not want to uproot those things for the sake of just getting rid of other things. And that, man, if that's not mysterious and strange and whatever. And so people knocking on the doors of my life and beginning to ask questions was helping to untangle some of those things that to me were all the same thing. And that's been really important.
Wow. I got to hear the inside scoop of you meeting a wheat farmer.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about that? What was that?
Yeah.
What did he tell you?
So
kind of was intriguing and really powerful.
I was sharing about this, that same analogy to a group of parents and whose kids were all struggling with different stuff. And this guy, this big guy in the middle of the room comes up to me afterwards and he says, hey, I'm a wheat farmer. I think it was Iowa. I'm not sure, but.
Makes sense. Sounds about right.
Yeah. Okay. Somewhere Iowa, out there. Sure. Nebraska.
Yeah. Somewhere, yeah, something like that.
Somewhere where they make, you know, grow wheat. And he said something to the effect of, yeah, it's actually a real problem. He said, if you get a bad batch of wheat and there's, or a bad batch that has stuff in it, like you can actually have weeds growing up in your field. And he said, it can desecrate a crop. It can just, you know, like do a lot of damage and cost you a lot of money. He said, but the thing is that the remaining crop actually is the best wheat because of what it has to go through to grow with the weeds nearby. Like the roots have to go deeper. It has to draw more nutrients in to stay alive. So there's this kind of like strange topography there. I don't know quite what to do with that, but there is something in there, I think, about God's heart for treasure.
Yeah.
And he's like
it's really powerful.
Like I think sometimes for us, I'll say this for me. Sometimes for me, when I see something in my life that I know isn't good, in my own self-hatred or shame, I want to take a shovel and I just want to go after it.
Yeah.
And God, that's rough work. God is much more like an archaeologist who's like just gently little bit by little bit because he knows there's something really valuable in there and it's not worth destroying. That points to our problem didn't initiate with the problem. There's an original good that God will not sacrifice, does not want to sacrifice in order to get rid of the bad. He's the eternal one. He's the only creator. The enemy can just muck up stuff around it. That's the way he plays. That's the way he likes to toy with us. And so when we recognize this stuff, if we turn into self-hatred and shame and let that drive our recovery, let that drive our sanctification process, really in the end, like we got no wheat We got no weak. It's like, what do we have? And Jesus wants to transform and make us better, make us more who he meant us to be.
The process of untangling that wheat.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's so painful.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when you said that, there were times where I would see somebody suffering. And I get emotional. I see somebody suffering and I just want to alleviate the suffering. I just want the suffering to go away. If you see somebody in pain, you just, even in church circles, right, you see somebody who develops a sickness or this past couple of years with COVID happening or different things. And I just want to jump in and fix it. And I think what I do is I put that on God, like, God, what the heck? Like, if I am somebody who wants to jump in and fix a problem, why don't you respond the same way? Mm-hmm. Why don't you respond by wanting to jump in and fix me? And it's very personal. And that's why I'm glad we're talking about this, because it's so personal. It's not just a sickness that's going to go away. We're talking about, for me, 10 years of an addiction that I lost my virginity to a prostitute in China on a missions trip.
Mm. Wow.
And I went with such great intentions of ministering to people.
Right.
And got so wrapped up in my sin that while I was there, it didn't just happen once, but happened twice. Mm-hmm. And the guy just really gave me a slap on the hand, the leader, and said, don't do that, and stuff like that. And no one helped me.
Wow.
And I went to churches and pastors and all these people and just never got help. Mm-hmm. So just got constantly told that maybe you're not a believer, or read this book, or go memorize scripture. And all the time it was like, Jesus, where are you? Like, mm-hmm. why don't you just take this away from me? And I think what I hear you saying is it's like, it's like God was like, Clinton, if I just remove it from you, you're not going to work anything out. You're not going to become who I want you to become. Yeah. And you have to do this untangling. Like, I know it hurts. This isn't the way I intended it. And like you said, that parable is so powerful because it says, like, what does it say? Like an enemy or somebody with malicious intent came in and they threw weed seed down, right? They threw something down that they knew this could potentially ruin this crop. And I just think, like, there's something there that you're talking about. Like, it's really hard. It was a long journey for me to even receive that and accept, like, Jesus, like, if you just took it away, yes, you could have saved me from that suffering. But what you had intended to produce would have not been produced by you just taking it away.
Yeah.
I don't know. You want to speak into that at all? I know I just went on a little rampant my personal story on that at all. When you shared that today earlier, I was like, oh my gosh, like, that's so real. And I just think that there are people, including myself for a long time, that was like, if you're such a good, good father, if you're such a good God, why do you allow this suffering to go on for years and years before? I mean, you saying that, it was great. You went to regeneration and they were able to knock on these doors and you're like, wow, I've never seen that before, and praise God. But why does God allow that kind of suffering? Why does a good God allow that stuff?
Yeah. I certainly do not know the answer to all that, but I think, and thank you for sharing what you did. I love that. And I don't, cause the weeds are real and the threat is real. And so even through this part of what I hear is you're saying that, and I don't want to miss this, is the grace of God, the love of God, to care about our suffering, even when our suffering is self-induced.
Hmm.
Like, he doesn't. You know, I would kind of be like, oh, well, you know, just desserts. You know, I did it. You know, I should suffer through it, as opposed to a God who's willing to enter in and come near to us in that place. Mm. And I didn't know Christ that way until I experienced that from other people. Mm. I do think here's one thing I've learned, that what we view as, like, this is just sin and I just need to stop it. And this is where the kind of drawing that parable from that parable comes short. Because the sins that we're doing are actually reaching for something.
Yeah, it's true.
And often, like, it's the reaching part of us that actually makes the wheat grow. So it's the farmer fertilizing, watering, caring for that soil that makes the weeds grow. And so where we see just these weeds coming out, I do think that somehow in the midst of that, the Lord can also see, like, you're looking for something. Hmm. You're desiring for something. You're reaching for something. Like, you know, when you're on a missions trip, going to hook up with somebody, like, you were looking for something.
Hmm.
You know, there's a searching guy looking for something. And that something mattered. And the searching part of you mattered. And so whether, you know, guys, women listening are looking at porn or opening the refrigerator at 11 p.m. when they're not hungry or sleeping with somebody who's, who they're not married to, we're all looking for something. And Jesus in his grace doesn't just say, stop being so damn hungry. You know, stop it. Just stop it. And so even as much as that, the leader in your trip might have thought he's being gracious, like in through that grid, he basically was like, I don't care about what you're hungry for. Because we don't just need forgiveness. We need forgiveness, but not just forgiveness. We need something that satisfies us. And maybe even before that, we need to know that we're hungry and what we're hungry for. Does that make sense?
It does. And I feel like what I hear you saying is that the reminder of that God is with us, even in that. I look back at those years and it's like, even though it was painful and there was suffering, I can look back and if I really do a prayer time where I'm looking back and saying, where were you, Jesus, at this moment? Where were you here? I can see him. I see a brokenhearted Jesus. I see a Jesus who is sad at what's going on. I see a God who is choosing to not intervene and just take over the situation. But I also see a God who is with me and he's sustaining me through that suffering.
Yeah.
I think it's hard for me to understand suffering. I think I live in a culture that and an age that just thinks that, you said it earlier, you said that truth should be kind. Every kind of truth should be nice. And when you said that, I know that we were around a lot of people that were older. Like, oh yeah, young people think that. And I was like looking around like, oh crap, I might be the only person who struggles with this, you know? But I think I am surrounded by a time when we think that everything should be nice. And yet when God calls us to certain kinds of suffering and doesn't take things away, I think that's hard for me and other people to interpret and really separate that tension of God is good and he does allow suffering.
Nobody wants to suffer.
No, it's true.
It doesn't matter how old you are.
It's like, true.
And if we have a way not to and that works, it's great.
It's true.
And I mean, it's, you know, so when Jesus talks about, you know, look, I know it's unpleasant for a while when you're disciplined. And he appeals to fathers to kind of recognize how your kids need that. I don't like to suffer. I'd much rather grab a beer or, you know, spoonful of peanut butter, or flip open, you know, Facebook Reels and just kind of lose it for a little bit, dissociate from my pain. But God, I mean, I think what that leads us to when we head down that road of insisting that suffering not be a part of our story, I think it does a couple things. One, it keeps the real wounds inside. Because oftentimes, like the reason we're looking at porn or looking at sexual activity in some way to heal us is because we never learned how to meet those needs in legitimate ways. And why didn't we? You know, why didn't we? Like my struggle with porn began right at the vortex of probably three or four significant, at least one was a trauma. One felt like an abandonment. One was a deep message about my identity. And the vortex of those things. And then right in the middle of there, you know, porn just, so I think God was looking at that time and being like, you know, I know that you're in. So my point with that is that's all pain. Those are wounds. Like, and so if I, and my present day wounds, the present suffering, actually, like there's a trail that leads back to some of those things. So if I'm looking at porn, I'm like, Lord, why don't you just take this away from me? Like, what's the matter? Like, because if I just take that away from you, like you're never going to heal from these other things.
You might find something else, but it's not we're not going to follow the trail.
Yeah.
Back to the root is what you're saying. Wow.
Yeah. Was there more about the suffering thing you wanted to?
I don't know. That was good stuff. I'm just analyzing how we're thinking. And I feel like it's really cool to see that. Cause it's almost like you're looking at a map and it's like that suffering, even though we want it to be gone, if we really start analyzing, where's it coming from? And I think that's really what a lot of men are scared to do. I think a lot of men come to us, at least at Restored to More, and they want to get rid of a behavior.
Yep.
A young man, they are aware of the suffering that's causing their marriage or themselves or their body. And they want to get rid of the thing that's causing the suffering.
Yep.
And I think what you're challenging all of us to do is, well, maybe follow that suffering trail and see where it leads and be willing to go down deep. Because if we just get rid of this, which, by the way, is really hard to do without getting rid of the roots, it'll just keep popping back up or get worse or all this kind of stuff. But it's like we have to go back to these root issues.
Yep.
How do we become willing to go there? Versus being desiring just to take away the surface level pain and suffering.
Yeah. Okay. So just let me slow it down a little bit. So let's say the present day, what I hear you saying is the present day suffering is I just blew up my marriage.
Yeah, absolutely.
My wife just looked at, or just found out that I've been looking at porn since before we got married and, or that I've had, you know, two affairs and, she's in great pain and maybe he's thinking about leaving and I'm embarrassed and ashamed and I just want this all to go back to the way it was. The problem is that the way it was wasn't really working to begin with because I had a big secret and was hiding stuff. Right. So I think the being willing to go back, that's a tough one. I don't know how we become willing. I mean, I will say, I think some of the ways that people do become willing is just what you described. Mm-hmm. Like I tried the shortcut over and over and over again, and it just kept coming back. And we've seen, you guys have probably seen this too, like so many marriages where a couple goes through some kind of restoration and then the guy falls again. And not that there are any guarantees ever, but if we're not excavating on a deeper level and keeping that stuff clear, then we're just more prone to going back to the dark. Hmm. For anybody listening, it's kind of like, you know, do you hate this pain? Like, would you rather not be here again? Like, and how far are you willing to go to kind of excavate and clear out the stuff that's that led to this so that you are less likely to be here again.
Yeah, so true. So good. I feel like the suffering component too, like it's amazing how what we've seen, at least with couples, is that when a husband goes there and starts working on those issues, his wife sees that he's not just trying to change his behavior for her. He's really willing to find out what's inside of him. And like you said, walk through the hallways of his heart and knock on some doors. And when he goes there with a therapist or with an intensive or with a group like Awaken or different things that are out there and really dig that up, he can start working on his identity. I love that you consistently talk about getting back to this wholeness, this identity of who are you really?
Yeah.
Especially as a believer, because I feel like that was the tension that me and you both felt was like, it sounds like, at least I don't want to assume that's your story, but it's like, God, I know who I am in you. And this isn't lining up with who I believe I am and who I want to become. So what's the gap here? And I think what you're saying is when you started knocking on those doors and there was healing or understanding or experience with Jesus, things started becoming transformed. You started entering into this new life. Am I right about that?
Yeah, exactly right about that.
Tell me about that.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of just kind of a story that encapsulates that to some degree. Well, let me, if this is too much, you know, cut it out. But so part of what I, as I began letting people knock on some of those doors, I started to recognize that I grew up in a single parent home. My dad left my mom when I was about two. Hmm. So deep feelings and wounds of abandonment.
Yeah.
And you know, my dad didn't think he left me. He thought he left my mom, but I was two. All I knew that he wasn't there. So, as much as I knew in my head that God is my father and he loves me, he's never going to leave me. Didn't matter how much I knew in my head. My heart would consistently feel like God was leaving and I had to hold it together to be good enough for him not to leave.
Wow.
So throw in sexual sin in there and then I'm like, you know, okay, he's leaving all the time.
I mean, sure.
Like, you know,
I'm not good enough. Every time I mess up.
Yep.
Distance.
Yeah. Same time growing up with my mom, I was a sensitive kid and I could see that my mom was in pain. Hmm. And I watched her go through, you know, a handful of relationships, serious relationships that went sideways. And So I watched her hurt, heartbroken again and again. Mm-hmm. And as a sensitive kid, I wanted to alleviate her pain. I wanted to help her. And in a real way, I needed her to be okay so I could be okay.
Sure.
Because I needed a mom to be okay. I didn't know any of that stuff. All I knew. So, you know, she knew me as a sweet kid who was, you know, would send her balloons at work to try to cheer her up and stuff like that. And I liked being known that way because that felt good for a little bit. But it continued to kind of feed this deep place in me. Like, I gotta do good. I gotta be good. I gotta be loving. I gotta be attentive. I gotta be on in order to be safe, to be loved, et cetera, et cetera. When I discovered pornography, and again, the vortex I was talking about before, this points coming together included some of just some outworking of what I just described in some poignant ways. But when I discovered pornography, part of what it did for me was now I had this I'm just going to say the way it seemed, like this community of women who were beautiful and desirable. And the way that they would quote unquote look at me, the way they would make me feel was I am desirable. And anytime I was hurting, they were there. Anytime I was stressed about schoolwork, like they were available. If I had a great day, they could celebrate with me. If I felt low and ashamed, like they didn't look at me any differently, you know, like, and nakedness itself is an expression of the body by God, by God's design. It's an expression of you are so valuable. I'm giving all of myself to you. And so pornography was basically like this, that was the message. So part of what began happening for me then was, as people started knocking on those doors and asking questions, like I described something in my family and, you know, one of my group leaders would say, hey, what you're describing is really painful, but you're smiling. Tell me what's going on there. I was like, oh, wow. I didn't realize that was going on, you know? So just tenderness there. People willing to hear my story and not, and ask questions about, like, so I'm, you know, I'm acting out with sexual sin and they're not saying like, hey, well, what can you do to not do that this week? You know, like, or, hey, don't do that again. Memorize this verse. Like, not that memorizing verses is bad, but instead starting to say like, well, what was happening for you? What was going on around that? Well, so all those things helped me to begin tracking back. Like there's something deeper in my story. There's some trauma back there. There's abandonment back there. And then to begin to recognize like, I'm looking to these images to try to do something for me. And the something I want them to do for me is not the secret sexual sin.
Yeah.
That's the surface.
Sure.
Deeper down, what I'm asking them to do for me is to tell me that I'm worth staying for. Is to tell me that I'm worth being there when I'm in pain. I'm worth attuning to.
Wow.
I'm worth giving one's whole life for. Now obviously, like none of those, I don't even know any of the people I watched in porn. Like, that, you know, they're not my life. They weren't really saying that to me. And after viewing porn, I'd always kind of be left with this greater emptiness of like, what an idiot. Like, and you know, I'm here alone, you know, like, but that's some of the wheat. That's what I mean. So like God didn't miss the, I know what you're looking for. I'm not going to pull that up. I'm not just going to take that away right now, because not that he wanted me looking at porn, he wanted me seeking him, but I was seeking him. I was just on the wrong street. I was headed in the wrong direction. I was, you know, running into this dead end over and over again. He's like, how can I just kind of turn you so you stop, you know, running into that dumb thing and start pursuing me. So
that's good. Well, thanks for letting us into one of those doors.
Yeah. Let me share one. Can I share one story? Again, you cut anything you want.
But, I love it. I love it. No, it's going great.
So I was at this, this was a key kind of moment for me. I was at this conference on sexual healing, and I was the people who were leading it were just great, and they were talking about wounds we experienced from our moms. And I was like, "What? I don't know." Like, and then they said, "Hey, we're just gonna pray. We're gonna move into a ministry time." That's what they called it. And I was like, "What's a ministry time?" And they just started praying for us, praying over us. And I'm sitting in this audience, and I just, I don't know how else to explain it, except I just started sensing God's love present with me right there. And in this picture, there's an empty chair next to me, and I was kind of leaning in the chair. And just I just had this picture of me like leaning on Jesus's breast like John was. I was just crying. I was like, man, you love me. You love me. And probably after like, you know, I don't know, no more than five minutes, I sat up. The ministry time is not over. Everybody's still praying. I sit up, and I wipe my eyes. And I'm like, okay, thank you, God. Thank you for loving me. Now, what do you want me to do? Because that's what I knew. Like you're giving me something. Mm. So I'll do something. Like I'm in this with you. Like, this is how this works. That was all under the surface. But I'm like, okay, what do you want me to do? Like, you love me so I can love the world. Now, what do you want me to do? And his response was fast. And it was so surprising that I knew it couldn't have been for me. Hmm. This is what I heard him say, sensed him saying, do. Hmm. I don't want you to do anything. I love you. I gave that to you because I love you. That's it. And in that moment, and this is sometimes when God speaks, it's like, you know, just a word, but it comes, it just has more meaning to it. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, it's a free gift. Hmm. And if it's not free, it's not really a gift.
Wow.
I thought, wow. Because that's the way my life had been. Like, the ones who loved me the most, I always felt some sense of, I've got to do enough.
They expected something of you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that, I mean, those kinds of experiences, that kind of like tracing back is some of the deeper rooted stuff. And if I hadn't been walking across my college campus and I said, God, why don't you just take this from me? And he's like, all right, rip. Then I would still be living that, like, I got to do something. I got to do good enough. I got to be good enough in order for God not to leave. And man, I'm glad I'm not there.
So good. So good. Wow. And I feel like, you know, we have to be willing to say what is underneath this, right? Yeah. We know that sexual addiction, it's more of a coping means to coping something underneath it. Yeah. You know, it's really not even the issue. It's just medicating the real issue.
Yeah.
And it is an issue, of course. I'm not saying it's not an issue. It's an issue. Betrayal is real and all that, and trauma that comes with it. But normally pornography and sexual addiction is the, what is that some therapists say that it's the illegitimate way to meeting legitimate needs.
Yep.
Right. And so it's like that. Understanding that. It's crazy.
And here's the other thing for married guys. Our wives have these deep, wide hearts.
Hmm.
And that's where they want to be loved.
Hmm.
And if we're not willing to travel, to traverse our own hearts, there's no way we can walk with them in theirs.
Yeah.
I mean, so doing this heart work is a way for us to learn to be able to sit with our wives
100%.
And where their hearts go. Not that our hearts will ever be as deep and wide and beautiful as theirs are in their unique way, but it does give us some breath for
that's
that.
Powerful.
And I'm still learning. I don't mean to sound like I got this.
That's great. No, I feel like what happens normally is what we've seen is that once a guy starts walking down the hallways of his heart and going down those doors, the wife can finally get a sense of, okay, I don't have to carry you. Like, you're willing to go down your own thing.
Yeah.
And for the first time, she feels everything she hasn't allowed herself to feel.
Come on.
Because she's so worried about him.
Yeah.
It's like what you talked about with your mom, right? You had to be that safe place for your mom.
Yeah, yeah.
And so if someone starts taking care of themselves, if a husband starts taking care of themselves, now a wife is like, oh, and that's what we see all the time. The wife gets – she falls apart physically. She falls apart emotionally or spiritually after the guy gets into recovery because she's like, oh, finally you can take care of yourself. I can like let go of this load.
Let me ask you about that then.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you think that's because, and I know this is, you know, I'm talking stereotypes here, but you think on some level that's because a woman knows maybe more intuitively that, you know, that this is heart stuff. That you just, you know, promising me you're not going to do it anymore. It's just not that simple. There's more going on here than this. And we're like, no, I just got no bad habit or whatever. And
Think that a woman has more intuition than we will probably ever understand.
Yeah,
you know, definitely a God-given gift for sure. I also think that over time, wives just start carrying the burden of holding the family together or taking care of this or taking care of the kids. Because what happens is most husbands, if they have kids, they're absent parents. Most of them will say that I didn't know how to show up for my kids. I had no emotional capacity. So a woman isn't called to take care of her whole family emotionally, but she has to because the husband's not there. She has to take care of them more often than not spiritually. I mean, me and you I was a husband. I was involved in the church. I was a father and I was a believer during my addiction. But I can look back and say, was I really present in those moments? The answer was no. And so Charity had to step up in incredible ways that she probably should have never had to have done. And so once I got into recovery, it just was like she could finally allow herself to feel.
Wow.
And that was really hard for me because then I'm like, what's wrong with you? I'm now in recovery. Why are you falling apart?
Wow, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's very confusing.
So on your end of things, there was a sense of like you should be happy now because I'm doing,
or at least relieved.
Yeah.
I mean, some sort of relief.
Yeah.
But normally there isn't. Normally it's like, then we have to go and, but I think why I said that was because what you said is that I also believe that God gave us this desire to protect and be there for our wives and to guide them. And we cannot do that unless we've let God enter into those places of our heart. I mean, it just like Paul said, follow me as I follow Christ. I think God, Jesus says, hey, you will be able to be there for your wife when you let me be there for you.
It's good.
When you, like your experience of you leaning on him and him saying, you, an intimate knowing of God, you were developing a knowing. And so once we develop that knowing of God, then we can look at our wives and say, hey, baby, I'm here for you now.
Yeah.
And I'm actually here for you because Jesus is here for me.
Yeah.
In his power that he's here for me, I can be here for you.
Yeah.
And I think that's what builds so much unity in a marriage.
And it's, I'll say after being married for 20 years, it's an ongoing journey because there's
totally
ever deepening.
There's not an arrival date, Josh. Is that what you're saying?
I really do.
Not on this side. Not on this side of the dirt. No. I mean, afterward, we're not married. So really, I just
Lord, I just got it together. That's funny. I think the yearning, like the desire to be there, is it's a good desire.
Absolutely.
It's just not the
100%.
Yeah, we're not there. I'm not there yet.
No, I don't.
My wife hears this podcast, she's like, you're not there yet.
Yeah. She'll be like, I'm glad you said that right there, Josh. Charity's not here too. So she'll be like, yeah, I would have kicked you right there.
Can we play back this part? This guy said something. Oh, it was you.
Charity, what do you keep playing again? The part where he says, I wouldn't have made it without her. You know, she came up and she carried all of us, which is true. Babe, if you hear this, I love you. Thank you. Right?
Seriously, I do think props to props and compassion for wives walking through this journey. Cause,
absolutely.
I think what they carry internally, in families and for men is so, and for themselves is so brutally difficult. And it does warrant all of our attention, all of our, let's dive in. And that desire that you mentioned, like, we want to be the hero, we want to help, like, and that's God given. So let it inspire us towards doing the hard work of recovery as opposed to like recoiling in shame and then just trying to fake it.
Yep. So. What a perfect segue to talk about Awaken. So those guys right now that are hearing this, that are like, okay, Josh, I hear you. I'm ready to make a decision to go deeper. I've tried omitting behaviors. I've tried putting up internet blocks and filters. And you guys are talking about some deeper issues that I know I haven't addressed yet. What are you guys creating at Regeneration that these guys can get plugged into?
Yeah. Well, one of our key things is spiritual coaching, where you can walk with an individual man who can be that guy helping to knock on some doors and pay attention, try to attune to some things that maybe you're not aware of. But with that, one of the things we've been working on for several years, we've actually been using a version of it in-house for a long time as a program called Awaken. And we really wanted to make it available to men far and wide because we know that not everyone can get in to see a spiritual coach. Everyone can afford a therapist. A lot of pastors or coaches or friends are trying to walk with brothers who are struggling and they don't really know. They don't have rungs and a ladder to help them. So Awaken is a robust program. It's broken up into four different modules and each module addresses a different component of a man. So there's strength, there's heart, there's mind, there's spirit. And there's overlap between all those, but we really just try to take a recovery approach that works from that angle. So with strength, as what might surprise most people, it's not just like, hey, working out. It's really about like, you've tried to just stop behavior and it's not working. So what can you do? And it's in that module, guys get help just kind of walking week by week on, let me uncover some of my patterns. Let me start paying attention to things I haven't been paying attention to. Let me start putting some things in place just to create some room for me now to do some of the deeper work. In heart, we talk a lot about emotion. We spent 12 weeks on just like, what are emotions for? What do we do with them?
12 weeks with guys and their emotions. That's got to be powerful. That's got to be really like life-changing for the guys that really dig in.
It feels too fast.
Yeah. I love it.
So many guys are like, what do you feel? I either feel fine or angry or stressed. Yeah. That's it. That's my emotional vocabulary right there.
Yeah. It's good. It's
awesome. Mind is really about the truth. You just should know the truth and the truth will set you free. And then spirit is really about how do we walk intimately with God, walk in the spirit And yet we're embodied creatures. So what does that mean? Mm-hmm. How do we walk intimately with Jesus? And so the way it's set up, you don't have to do it in order. If you know, you feel like you've got your kind of some basics in place, you want to dive into one of the modules, just do it. And along with Awaken, the curriculum, which is a subscription thing, it's $14 a month, you know, price of three coffees, right?
That's crazy affordable.
Is the Awaken community, which is just a community of guys online who just want to stay connected, some who don't have any other community, some who do, some have been down this path for a long time, and we're trying to grow that community just to be an encouraging place for guys who just wanted another place to check in. You know, This is not a replacement for a mentor. It's not a replacement for like face-to-face allies on the journey, but it's an addition to that that can really help guys add some jet fuel to what they're trying to do. So,
wow, that's awesome. Yeah. Is there other stuff that Regeneration is creating right now that you want to talk about? What else is there that you are excited about?
Yeah. That's a good question. I should have been prepared for that. What else are we working on that we're excited about?
You have your book that you wrote, which is a super amazing book.
I should say something about that.
It's good. Yeah. You should. Go ahead.
So it's great. I am excited about this. With Daniel Weiss, who's the president founder of Brushfires Foundation, we released a book last summer, called Treading Boldly Through a Pornographic World, a Field Guide for Parents. And so it's for moms and dads who are just feeling like, how do I get after topics of sex and sexuality in this culture that's so digitally connected? Like where it just seems like every generation knows something, is living something in the digital world that we're, I don't know if you feel that, but I feel
I
that.
Do. So, 100%. Okay. 100%.
Yeah. So
maybe even, 100%.
Yeah. So it's not a book about internet blockers. It's not a book about technology. Mm. It's really like, we don't believe the answer is in technology. The answer really is in relationships. So it's about how do I dig into this stuff with my kids in a relational way? So
good.
Yeah. Treadingboldly.com, or just go to Amazon and look up Treading Boldly. You'll find it anywhere. And then as a ministry, we're looking to do more stuff with women. So we actually are gearing up to do a women's podcast that'll start hopefully this summer. We want to make sure it's great.
You guys have a podcast?
We do. Becoming Whole.
Becoming Whole.
Becoming Whole. WHOLE. Not, sweet. Yeah. The opposite. So Becoming Whole podcast, which is just it's like a 10, 12 minute podcast once a week, just a pithy thought or ramblings by yours truly, hopefully to help people on their journey. So, yep.
It's awesome. Yeah. Josh, thanks for being with us, man. We're excited. You can check all that out, by the way, on the show notes, which will be great to click on and get those resources. But thanks, Josh. This has been awesome.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks, man.
I'm yours until the end of time.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, follow us on Instagram, and sign up for the upcoming course. You can also connect with us on the Ask Us Anything page at restoredtomore.com. Also, quick note. All the work at Restored to More Inc., including this podcast, is made possible by our donors and financial partners. We wouldn't be here without those who have generously given to the cause of restoration. If you ever feel led to give, you can do so on the donate page on our website,